Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 5th, 2014. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I am totally pumped for this show today. I do not know why. I'm just pumped. I can't stop thinking about this show. I don't know why. It's not like there's anything special. We don't have a great guest or anything. It's just today I feel really good about the show. I don't know what it is.
Wow. Well, very it's probably because we had a good show last week, right?
A little momentum there going
on. Momentum, exactly. Actually, we got some good stuff to talk about. So, yeah, I think it should be a good show.
It should be a good show. And
your excitement is warranted.
And I think that the first topic here, when it first happened, I was very, very worried. But then I started reading a lot about it, and I started reading what the COO had to say. And I wasn't too worried after that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But everyone knows the Seminole Hard Rock Poker Open, which absolutely crushed its $10 million guarantee last year. This year, they went with a higher buy-in and came up $2.5 million short. Scott, what does that mean to you?
Wow. first of all, I mean, there's two ways of looking at this, and I'm sure all the reading you've done kind of looks at this as well, too. I mean, for most of us, just to think that missing a guarantee by $2.5 million, it seems like heads are going to roll, right?
Yeah.
But the flip side, I've been hearing people say, hey, folks, it's still a $7.5 million prize pool.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
A huge prize pool, yeah.
And obviously, not to say that anybody can afford $2.5 million, but the Seminole Tribe is doing quite well down here. So if anybody could afford it, they could. So, and we should also remember that $2.5 million is, you know, that's before their house fees are taken out.
Right.
Before you account for the increase in cash game rate, hotels,
restaurants,
food,
everything,
all that kind of stuff. So I don't think anybody, it's tough to say off the top of my head, but I'm not thinking that they lost a ton of money on this event. And plus, they had a bunch of lead-up events as well, too.
Yeah, and all of the ones before it made their guarantees, too.
Exactly.
So you take all the money that they take from the rake from all the events, and they had a ton of events, and then you take the rake they got from this event, and you apply it all together. I'm sure it adds up to, you know, and then the money they make from everything else. It's not like they're going to be a loser on this deal. It's just that they certainly did not want to miss the guarantee.
Right, right, exactly.
I was worried, though. I mean, you know, you start to think, okay, well, we're in the industry of advertising for them, and we advertise their events for them, and then all of a sudden they start losing money on events. All of a sudden they say, where can we cut money? And, you know, or something like that. Then you get all worried and you panic, but, you know, then you listen to calmer heads prevail, and they say, hey, look, it's just, we want to be the biggest and the best, and sometimes things like this happen, and this will attract more people next time because I think there might be another chance at an overlay. And then when they blow it out of the water again next year, they get all their money back. So, you know, you can't look at it like that. It's just like when you play poker and you lose one night, you say to yourself, "It's one long session. I just lost tonight." You know what I mean? But generally, I win. Same with this. You know, that's how you got to look at it.
Yeah, and you know, and we did a story on guarantees, probably a
couple years ago. Yeah, at least a couple years ago.
And that was what one of them, one of the managers said, that of a big room, and obviously the Hard Rock's a big room. You know, sometimes we do want to miss our guarantees because it's good advertising. It shows people that we're aggressive with our guarantees. And if we miss it, you know, it attracts people to come back because they think we're going to miss it again. And obviously we need to go back to the drawing board and make sure we don't. So it's not the end of the world. Missing a guarantee. I mean, obviously, no one wants to miss it by $2.5 million, or really 25%, which is probably the more accurate way of looking, because no one else does a $10 million guarantee.
Right.
You're right. I think the CEO made some good comments. He's like, you know, we're in this for the long haul. They obviously, you know, crushed the guarantee last year. This year they fell off. I'm going to guess that they're probably going to take a hard look at the buy-in. I think it was 3,500 last year. I think it was 5,300 this year.
Right.
Quite possibly might go back to that 35 next year. Or do something else. They're obviously going to take a look at this. So, I mean, the big question I think going forward is, and we've got several months before we'll probably hear an announcement, you know, do they keep the $10 million and shoot for it again, or do they scale back and go $5 million or $7.5 million or something like that? This is kind of the problem is I think they set that bar high, right?
Yeah.
So if they come back and go, hey, it's only going to be a $7.5 million guarantee, which is still staggering, right?
Yep.
People are going to go, eh. Or they're going to consider it a failure. So I almost think they're kind of locked into trying to get the $10 million and just to retool it and make sure they get it. And they know they can do it. They did last year. So I think the question is, did they do it last year because everybody was brand new and everybody was just super excited and stoked by it? And everybody came last year because they thought there was going to be an overlay, which I thought last year. And that is that why they did so well last year? And then when they saw that they crushed it, there are people this year are like, well, if it's not an overlay, you know, I'm not going to go. And it costs, you know, $1,500 more. And this is the other thing I thought was interesting I'd like us to talk about. One of the comments from the CEO was somebody asked him about the competition going on. You know, you had the big River Series out at Windstar, which draws phenomenal. We had our Antioch World Championship at Thunder Valley. There's another big event going on. The Talking Stick Arizona Championships, which does fantastic business. Not of them all overlap, but they're all in the same month, right?
Yeah.
And they asked CEO about the competition, and he's like, you know, we should be the competition. And I guess that's the way I look at it. It sounds arrogant, but it shouldn't be. I mean, when you put a $10 million guarantee on your tournament, you shouldn't be worried about people choosing between your event or another event. The reality of it is that I think people did choose between those other events, particularly at the higher price point. I mean, how many tournaments are 5,300 buy-ins now?
Right. I was thinking the same thing. I'm saying back when it was 3,500, you could get some people who might go to our world championship who would choose them over us because it's only a little bit more than our 1,600 buy-in. But now when it's 53, now they're like, that'd be my whole airfare and my hotel rooms and my food and everything if I go to the world championship and can still make, you know, 100 grand or more if I win it, you know. So, you know, it's not a million, but it's also not 5,300 out of your pocket, plus travel and air and all that, or travel and food and everything. So, yeah, I think there was a combination of things here. And imagine if they didn't have that PokerStars agreement. You know what I mean? And
that's actually, we hadn't seen how much that helped, but obviously, I'm sure it helped.
It had to have helped. And so you got to think now that they have a whole year of people who qualify online. Now, next year, they probably will not miss the guarantee because the only thing that's going to happen between now and then is more people are going to be playing online and more states might come on board and they may even do something federally by then. Who knows? You never know.
Yeah.
So I think they're probably going to stick with the guarantee because no one likes to go backward if they don't have to, and I think they might stick with it and then make it next year. But you're right. Didn't he also say that we might consider moving it a week or not? Or I think he did say that though.
Probably. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I know he did say he likes the calendar. He likes the spot in the calendar. But you know, I mean, this is the kind of thing, and we're going to talk about this more probably in this next item that we're going to talk about. But you know, the calendar's just bloated with tournaments now. So I mean, moving it a week here or there doesn't really make a big difference. I mean, you know, I think the default that managers do is, hey, are we overlapping with anybody in our immediate area? Are we overlapping with anybody around the country? But I think, as we just discussed, it doesn't really matter if you overlap if you're close enough to another big event. You know, obviously the pros have plenty of money that they can play all the events, but the circuit grinders, those kind of people, I don't think that they can afford to spend $10,000-$12,000 on buy-ins in a single month.
Mm. Yeah, that's too much.
But yeah, this is a very intelligent company. Let's be clear about that. They've turned this brand into, you know, liquid gold.
Yeah.
Very smart people working there. Obviously, they're embarrassed by this, I'm sure, but they're going to. I guarantee you, they're working already right now on what they're going to do next year to make this a success. And I mark our words. I don't think that we're going to be talking about missing an overlay a year from now.
Right.
We'll see what happens.
Right. Missing the guarantee.
But yeah. So as I mentioned, kind of related here. Matt Savage, the well-known tournament director, He's always big on Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. He's got a ton of Twitter followers and is very quick. Does very good customer service on Twitter. I give him huge credit for that. I'm not on the Twitter, so I don't follow him there. But I am on the Facebook, and he's not as active on Facebook as he is on Twitter. But he did make a post this week right after the guarantee was missed, and essentially said that casinos, tournament directors, and players need to work together because tournaments are a fragile ecosystem, and if the three of them aren't working together, they're not going to grow. They're going to continue to recede, and that's going to be bad for everyone. Now, obviously, because he's Matt Savage, he's got a lot of followers on Facebook, too, so they had 60, 70 comments when I quit reading. Generally, the comments from players were that this trend towards re-entries is the big pickle. People just, amateurs and grinders don't like the fact that pros can go in and take seven bullets and essentially buy a tournament from them. And that was the overwhelming thing. Obviously, a lot of other comments made what people made, but what do you think about all of this, I guess?
Well, I always like that Matt is always pushing for our industry, you know, to get along and to understand the industry. Of course, it's in his best interest as well, and that makes sense. But sure. He's very smart, and he understands how things work. And I have to say that the re-entry thing, I was always on the fence about it. I didn't know if it would come back and bite people on the ass or not. And it was one of the reasons why I thought our World Championship was so successful, is that you just had one chance, one extra chance to do. You had one re-entry. You couldn't just sit there and fire a bunch of bullets. So it was like a happy compromise, you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that made people happy. So maybe that's what we need to do. We need to see, you know, because when it was rebuys, you know, you had to literally target that tournament because you knew it was going to be a rebuy tournament. You saved up. Everyone knew going in it wasn't a $10 tournament. It was a $100 tournament. You're going to buy in 10 times because you just want to play with a bunch of chips and you want to take a bunch of chances, and then that's the way you're playing because you know that's what it is. When it's a re-entry, it's a different animal. And I mean, I don't mind it because a lot of times the re-entries are building the prize pool and they have to start over, and a lot of times they get moved. And from a business standpoint, when you're running, say, the Antioch Poker Tour, you're hoping to make the guarantees, or you're hoping enough people show up so that, you know, your tournament looks successful and you don't have to say people, you can say entries, and then you know. So, I mean, there's half, six of one, half dozen of the other, you know, when it comes to how I feel about it. But overall, I think that's a really good reason why people are staying away. Because, like you said, if you know, you give that, and it takes away variance for the pros. You know, when you get involved in a pot with a pro and you're not a good player, you want to play big pots with them because you want to take the skill out of it because they're a better skill at it than you are.
Sure, sure.
Same thing with a tournament. If you get into a tournament with somebody and you knock them out, that's your one chance to get, hey, okay, I've survived. I've beat the pro, and now I can, you know, beat the lesser players. But this guy says, oh, you know, guess what? Nope, you didn't really knock me out. Here you go. Here's another 1,500. I'm back in. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, whoa. You know, there goes the variance, because if you give a pro 10 chances to win a tournament, he's going to win 1 out of 10, or he's going to cash 1 out of 10, or better.
Right.
So, yeah, I can totally see that for people giving that as their reason for steering clear of tournaments or not entering as many tournaments, because if they all have re-entry in them, people are going to be like, well, what's the point then, you know? And I'm sure, like, old-timers like, Caro hate things like that because he always wants to be one and done, and he wants there to be just one winner and everything.
Right,
so
right.
Old-school guys hate it, and people who are on borderline of, you know, being recreational semi-pro probably hate it because they can't afford to do it that many times. And, of course, these pros are better than them. So, but to get back to the whole topic, you know, I think he's right. I think we all need to work together and do our best to stay out of each other's way, but also to find the happy medium for all players so that they're all interested and they all want to play and all can play and will play.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to economics, too. I mean, I think the re-entry in your local tournaments is a good thing. You know, if it's a $100 buy-in, everything's relative, obviously, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the $100 buy-in, I think people are more accepting of the re-entry because, obviously, the more people that can afford to re-enter, the more accepting they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a $5,300 tournament here, or $3,600, or even at $1,650 that have gone re-entries to. And, you know, you're a normal recreational player, $1,650, that's a pretty big buy-in for them, right?
Yeah.
So they don't have two or three bullets in their pocket. If it's a $100 tournament, then, yeah, they can fade that that reentry a little bit more, and they probably want the reentry at that point. So I think that's part of the reason that we're talking about this. The other thing, too, which I think is what Matt was getting at, and I should stop and say that Matt has always been critical of the reentries anyhow, and on his Facebook thread here, he did post a link to the Poker News article that he wrote about it. He was kind of a savant on this, saying, hey, be careful what you guys want. And then really, I think that's it. I mean, I think he's right that this is a time for people to work together, and this is so difficult for these three entities that he's talking about to actually truly work together. It's one of the things I try to do when I travel and I talk to folks. Obviously, I try to do it on the show here, too, is I try to give players the casino's viewpoint. I'm not advocating it, but I'm giving them so they understand how this works, because I think what happened here, and I'm not blaming players for this, but I think players need to understand how this whole reentry thing happened. I think where this all started, obviously, was, you know, players don't want to come to tournaments unless they know there's going to be a prize pool to play for, right?
Yeah.
So then you're forced to put a guarantee on it, okay? Well, now you put a guarantee on it so people know to come. Now, to get that guarantee, if we let people re-enter multiple times, we have a better chance of hitting the guarantee. Makes sense, right? So mm-hmm. Now re-entries are going. Obviously, tournament directors, some of them get paid based on entry. Some of them get paid based on the success of the event. So anything that's going to make that particular event a success, they're generally on board for. And re-entries seem to be that. So now what happens is we started this thing where it all made sense at in separate angles when it started, and now it's grown into what I think some people saw from the beginning as the problem, is now it's created this beast that it's hit the ceiling and it's falling back down, because now players are like, well, yeah, we like the reentry, but only if it benefits us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we want you to have a guarantee. Just guarantee the prize pool. Why do you have to do reentries to guarantee it? Well, you know, it's a huge risk, as we've seen. This one came up $2.5 million short. That's a big risk. So I would say if players are willing to accept smaller guarantees, the casinos are less likely to offer reentry because they know they get the smaller guarantees. But it's just this vicious cycle of, you know, people wanting guarantees and casinos trying to find a way to get the guarantees. And that's got to end at some point. And I don't know when that is going to end.
Everyone has to give up on the dream of having their cake and eating it, too.
That's really what it comes down to, I think, is that, let's just be more sensible about this. You know, because when we're out talking at the World Championship, because again, a lot of people were very appreciative of how we set that up with the single reentry format, people just want these tournaments to be as successful as possible. So people there were talking about, you remember the days when we just used to go to the casino and play poker? You remember those days? And I think I actually still remember those days. I mean, right back when we got into this, you know, it didn't seem to be this stressful. There didn't seem to be reentries and huge guarantees and everything. People just kind of went and played poker, right?
Yeah.
And people have gotten away from that now. Now they need a reason to go play poker, or they need a reason to go play poker here rather than somewhere else. And that's what's causing this, I think. So, you know, if tomorrow, and this is a dream, obviously, tomorrow everybody just wakes up and goes, you know what? I just want to play poker today. Then this thing all resolves itself. Obviously, it's not going to happen. So what we need to do is, as you said, everybody just needs to realize, you know, you can't get everything you want. But, you know, if everybody clamors to have everything they want, next thing you know, you don't have a tournament anymore. Or your local poker room has to close, and you can't play poker at all. So that doesn't mean take what you can get, but it also means be realistic about your expectations.
I had visions of, like, players getting together and forming, like, unions and local chapters, and then sending a representative to like a three-way meeting with like the casino head and the tournament director head, and the player rep shows up, and these are our list of demands, and then they work out, and then we have strikes and scabs, and you know what I mean? Norma Ray standing up there holding the sign, no re-entries, you know what I mean? It's just, you don't want it to ever get to that point, you know? It's like in the wild, a tiger tackles or a lion tackles a wildebeest, he only eats one wildebeest. They don't go and tackle 10. They don't fill their stomachs and keep tackling 10 more. They tackle one because they know how it works. We should figure it out. You know what I mean? We're smarter. Let's figure it out. Throw greed out the window and just figure out how we can all make money and all be happy, you know?
Yeah, and really the solution is, I know what Matt's saying, we all need to work together. I think we all need to work independently towards the same goal. It's probably the more successful way.
Yeah.
There's some managers I know I talk to at casinos that are like, you know what? I am going against the grain. I'm not going to put this big guarantee on, or I'm not doing this, and I know I'm going to take Gruffin players, and I'm just hoping they're going to give me 10 minutes to explain myself to them and understand it. But that's really tough to do, to go against players like that. I think we also need players to spread the word about what we're talking about here. When they hear somebody complain about the guarantee not being high enough and at the same time complaining about reentries, you need to explain, hey, this is a business. You got to figure this out. You can't have both. And hopefully, the players can work together to get their expectations more in line with reality. Casinos can be stronger because of that and offering what they're most comfortable offering without having to go to lengths. And then together, maybe we're getting somewhere.
I totally agree. And, you can't just expect a casino to just want to give you money. I mean, they're in the business to make money.
Yeah.
And they can't expect us to just want to go to a tournament that's going to, suck. So
yeah.
You got to find what's beneficial to everyone, and then only the people that, are truly terrible at the game but are there for entertainment are the ones that are going to lose. You know what I mean? That's the way it goes. You got to be entertained by this, and if you're doing it for a living, then you got to figure out what's best for everyone then. That's the way it goes. So.
True. All right, so another interesting, it's been a very controversial week in poker.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, so Oliver Bousquet and Daniel Coleman, who is, doing wonders for poker recently, they both wore T-shirts stating the positions on the Israeli-Palestinian crisis when they finished first and second in the EPT Super High Roller televised Poker Shards event in Barcelona. And just to add more intrigue to the story, they're on competing sides of this crisis. And afterwards, PokerStars announced that players wearing clothing with controversial political messages will not be seated in future televised events. So, question is, this is censorship or smart business?
I feel like there's more to it than just those two things. But
it probably is.
You know what? I don't think it's censorship. I think this is a private thing. I realize it's televised, but this is their tournament, and you want to enter their tournament, you have to follow their rules for everything else. If they don't want you to use their tournament as a vehicle to do what you want to do with your political statements, that's their prerogative. It's their tournament. They're paying to put it on. They're the ones that are sponsoring it. They're the ones that's getting the TV there. I don't feel like it's censorship because you didn't have to play in that tournament. You didn't have to, it's up to them to, if at the final table, we talked about this before with Antonio wearing sandals or something at the final table, the $18 million win that he had or whatever. So, it's like, it's their tournament. You have to abide by their rules. If when you go into a casino and you start counting cards, they can throw your ass out because it's their casino.
Yep.
So, I don't know if it's smart business, but it's cautionary. I think they're being cautious with why. This is a sport.
Yeah, I think we could say they're within their rights.
Yeah, within their rights.
Now, whether it ends up being good for them or bad for them is another whole other debate. But.
Yeah. I think they're absolutely 100% in their right to say, look, you can't wear anything. Could they wear, they already put black tape over hats that have logos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How is this any different? This is zero different because one's political and one's business.
Well, people said the same thing back then, so.
Oh, no, I know, but they did it, and we stop thinking about it. Now it's commonplace. You see every reality show, somebody's wearing a Celtics shirt and they blur it out on their shirt. Like, oh, the Celtics are really going to reap the benefits of being on the Amazing Race for 20 seconds. But they blur it out anyway. I mean, it's stupid. So, I don't know. But I think that they've been doing it on television with everything, not just poker. And when you're going to do something like this where these two guys are on conflicting sides, and I'm sure PokerStars is like, can't we all just get along? As far as the final table of an event, this isn't world economics and religion. Let's just, I don't really consider it censorship because while it's within their right to do whatever, wear whatever they want, it's also a PokerStars' right to manipulate their footage or their TV, whatever, however they want. So, you want to make your statement? Well, PokerStars made their statement.
Yeah, I think it's funny is the wrong word, I should say. But I can just imagine the headache at PokerStars headquarters, right? They're like, you know, we're trying to get back in the U.S. We're putting on these events. We're trying to run these events. We're going to do everything. Like, and now I got this extra headache of people saying, why do you let these guys wear these T-shirts?
Yeah.
It's like, really? This is what I need to spend my time with now? So the censorship thing, I think, is always really dicey. And I like to take this out of poker and try to explain to people the difference between censorship and... Because everybody's like, oh, First Amendment. It's a First Amendment. And obviously this happened in Spain. There's no First Amendment.
Right.
Let's go back to, when Hank Williams Jr. went off on his tangent, right? And then Monday Night Football fired him. Everybody's like, censorship! What about the First Amendment to say what you want? Well, the First Amendment doesn't say you can say whatever you want without consequences.
That's right.
It just says you can say whatever you want. And obviously the consequence of him speaking his mind was that the company that hired him decided that they didn't want him to represent him anymore.
Yeah, it's contract.
No problem there.
Yeah.
But people went all, crazy over that. And I think that's the same thing here. I mean, PokerStars isn't saying you're not allowed to speak your mind. They're just saying you got to speak your mind somewhere else.
That's right.
not on our table with our TV cameras. So the censorship thing, I think, is hogwash. And I'll be happy to argue with anybody that thinks otherwise. Now, the other question, though, is the business, and I think it's a real slippery slope now. So, I mean, now, when you made this decision, you have to actually have a somewhat of a standard in place, right, for what is acceptable and what isn't. So, is wearing a Jimmy Carter campaign T-shirt a controversial political message? The guy ran for president 90,000 years ago, right?
Yeah.
But it's political, so if you're going to allow that in, then what's to say? And that's a very strange example, but it gets to the point of now you've got standards that you got to come up with, and some things are not overtly political, but are political. And I mean, it's one of these things. It's like the poor guy that's in charge of approving personalized license plates at every DMV in the United States, right?
Yeah.
Because there's always some ass jack, that's trying to get away with, some kind of coded message on there. And these guys are responsible for, researching everything to be sure that you're not just, it's not a nickname your mom gave you, but it's, some kind of, hidden Hitler reference.
You're right.
And that's the same thing with these things. I mean, everybody's going to complain about somebody's shirt going forward. I promise you that.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have a Fruit Loop shirt on. Oh, that contributes to kids' obesity. Political statement. So that's the real problem I think they're going to run into going forward with this, and probably why I would have decided not to. I would have probably said, hey, people can say what they want on this. It's going to be hard for us to enforce a policy. The clothes, if they come out buck naked, that's a different story. As long as they're clothed, then that's it. But I think there's also a taste test too, right? If you come out with a big obscenity and 5,000 point weather letters on your shirt, I think we can all agree that's not appropriate, right?
Well, that's the thing, is that the FCC would get involved then. So
that is probably true.
You know what I mean? So if they get involved with saying we can have
an
obscenity,
I don't know about the rest of the
right? That's true. But if it's airing in the
live stream too, where there's actually no regulations. So.
That's true too.
That's a good standard to use at least. This is going to be on TV in the United States or whatever country has the stricter
guidelines.
Guidelines, use that as your guidelines.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that there's any, I could be wrong, I don't believe there's any guidelines that say Save Gaza is offensive, which is what one of the shirts was. So that's where he gets more sticky. So I think it's going to be very interesting to watch how this plays out. It might get back to what I think some of our listeners, we should have uniforms. We should show up at...
It just says,
going to Catholic school. You show up, you pay your $10,000 to get in this tournament, and they, what are you, a large? All right, here you go.
A shirt that says seat one.
Yes, exactly.
Seat two, seat three. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antialphamagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This comes from Dr. Frank. And he always sends us something. Because Dr. Frank always plays live. Mm-hmm. And he'll always throw us something, even though he's never available when we need him. He says, I'm a local poker room. They're running a promotion called Splash the Pot. everyone knows what this is. You know, you throw money in the pot randomly to some table. And he says, so my one table, my 1-2 table got picked, and the foreman came over and threw $60 on the next pot. He said, I thought the strategy would be simple. No one would fold. Everyone would limp. Whoever flopped the best hands would probably each get it all in. But that's not what happened. The blinds posted, under the gun lent for $2, under the gun plus one shoved for $85 into a $65 pot. It folded to me in the cutoff, and he says he had about $115 behind. And then he says, the button, both blinds, and the under the gun limper all had me covered and were still left to act on the raise. I had queen jack offsuit. It was $85 to call, $150, about 1.8 to 1. After tanking for a while, I folded. Question number one. Do you think it was a good fold? Let's deal with this first.
Yes.
Yes, I do too. Why? Because one, first of all, it's not enough on your money. Second of all, you only have queen jack. At best, you're in a race. At worst, you're dominated, yep, and, or even crushed with, you know, a better pair than that. So there's no reason to flip, and not even really flip with somebody for not even 2-1 on your money. What's the point? Why? Because there's dead money in there? Big deal. You know, it's not dead anymore. You got somebody else active in there with two cards. So, and they can't go away. So, no, I think it's a good fold. Nothing wrong with that. Question, sure. you agreed, right?
I do.
Okay. All right, question two. When the pot is juiced like that, 30 big blinds, how do the preflop decisions change? Clearly, you'd limp with anything. Small raises would be meaningless because everyone would call a 3x raise. With a good enough hand, you'd like to cut everyone else out of the pot, so you might raise big or even shove. Our villain shoved with 42 big blinds. If you were playing very deep, like 200 big blinds, what's an appropriate size raise that's not a shove? What hands would... He said question number two, but there's like 10 questions here. what hands would you raise with and how much? What hands would you shove 200 big blinds on? Finally, what hand would you have to call a shove like this? By the way, everyone folded to the villain who had ace king. So, all right, let's deal with this first. There's a little more after this, but... I don't know about the clearly everyone would limp stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, if I'm looking down a good hand, there's dead money out there. I'm not just limping to make everyone happy.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I think the best answer for Dr. Frank is to Google ante-only tournaments and see what some of the pros are writing about it. Because this situation is very – this cash game, right? This is the cash game equivalent of the ante-only tournament, I think. Because in an ante-only tournament – very quickly, the blinds don't go up, but the antes go up, and every hand you are anteing. So there's always a ton of dead money in the pot compared to the bring in.
Right.
So this is the same thing he's talking about. I mean, you would think off the top of your head in that scenario that you're getting tremendous pot odds on almost any holding you have at that point, right? Assuming that you can get to the flop prone of the limp. That's the problem, right?
Right.
So, so I'm always often when I play those tournaments, I'm always trying to get to the flop cheaply. I play a lot of hands for that reason. However, if you get somebody in the hand like the gentleman that he had in here that realizes, hey, there's dead money in that pot, the first person that gets really aggressive about it is probably going to win that pot. If you get somebody like that at the table, he's going to start cleaning up because I think everybody else is going to make the decision we did. Hey, it's not worth calling this ridiculous amount to win this. So obviously the challenge there is to not abuse that and do that with any two cards because at some point somebody's going to get tired and call you and you're going to have to win. But I think that's really to defer the answer to somebody else. There's obviously smarter poker minds out there that figured out ante only tournaments, but that's really, I think, where we need to go to figure out this answer.
The other thing, too, is that there has to be some sort of respect for the under the gun plus one shove. I'm not saying that... You know, it's a 1-2 game. It's not exactly, Doyle Brunson against Todd Brunson in these hands. But I'm saying for someone in that early with a limper and people behind that many people behind you to act, this guy has to fade at least 16 cards or so. So, I mean, he's got to have something. And in this case, he did. He had ace-king. So you have to respect that, too. You can't just automatically think, all right, I'm going to call. But I want to make sure we answer specific questions because if we don't, I'm sure he'll email and say, hey, you didn't answer my question. So... he says, clearly you'd limp with anything. Small raises would be meaningless. So he says, our villain shoved with 42 big blinds. If you're very deep, what's an appropriate size raise if that's not a shove? Well, I don't know. I mean, how could you possibly know? I still have to know everyone else's stack, too. That's not a shove, and they, you know what I mean? I don't know what a raise would be because if I'm getting people who are going to have 50% of their stack committed by the size of my raise, then they're going to shove over me. So I don't know what, you know what I mean? I just don't know what the appropriate amount would be. I don't necessarily agree that three times big blind is meaningless.
No, I agree with you on that.
If I look down at deuce seven and somebody's made it six or eight to go and there's 65 in the middle, I don't know if I'm calling eight with deuce seven and I've got, you know, I just don't know. I don't know if I am. And there's some people who may not even be thinking like you are. And they might not even say, it's dead money in the middle. They might just say, oh, this is my one chance to win, and I couldn't win. You know, and
I think it's similar to a kill pod, too, which I think actually Frank actually wrote us about at one point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the kill pod, the stakes are higher, and there is dead money in, right? Because the kill guy has to post that money. So that money's not technically dead, I guess, because he gets an at-class. But there's additional money in the pot that's not supposed to be there. And so, you know, I think... Well, the way he's thinking is everybody's going to look at their hand and say, hey, I've got so many pot odds, I got to call. And even if somebody raises 3X, even though I got seven dudes, I got to call. Look at all that money in there, right?
Yeah.
Where I think you're right. I think a lot of players are like, you know, gosh, you look down at seven dudes, and gosh, I wish I would have had a better hand here because this is a great spot for me to be in, but I don't have a good enough hand for this. I'm going to fold.
Yep. I think that happens.
I think you got to know the players, too. I mean, and this is tough to say in this scenario because it's splash the pot, which happens maybe once a night at your table.
If you're lucky, yeah.
Yeah, two maybe. So you don't get a good sense of how people respond to it. In the Anioli, obviously, every hand is like that, so you get a sense of how cautious people are and how aggressive people are, and you can adjust at that point.
Right.
You know, if I know in this game that people are gamblers, obviously I'm going to assume that a big raise is going to get called by several people. And, you know, somebody made this... 3x raise and I have aces, then yeah, actually I'm going to re-raise pretty big there because I know everybody's going to call and I don't want everybody to call. If I know that everybody is pretty tight at this table, I'm going to have to give them credit for, you know, a smaller raise is probably going to accomplish what we want, which is to thin the field.
He also asks, what hands would you raise with and how much? And I'm not sure if he's going back to the situation he was in or the one he presented with a 200 big blinds if you're being deep, but to me, I would just play my hand normally. If I had ace-king or if I had a pair that was respectable, I mean, if I had a set-mining pair, I would just limp along or call a minimum raise. But, you know, ace-king, maybe ace-queen, you know, jacks, tens, things like that, I would probably raise with those hands like I normally do and then see if it thins the field, and if it doesn't, then just be cautious from there on. And I don't know if I would shove. I don't think I'd hate this guy's shove.
No, of course I don't.
At all. I mean, you know what I mean? But
I mean, there's 65 dead money in there.
Yeah, yeah, and you've got ace-king. You know, you'd shove with ace-king when there's nothing in the middle sometimes.
And somebody's going to have a good hand to call you. I mean, this goes back to why loose aggressive players are so successful, is that they put the rest of us to decisions that are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And they know that a lot of us are uncomfortable with this decision, so they're not. So I'm not saying this guy's loose aggressive, but when you shove 85 bucks into a pot with 65 in it, people are going to have to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to just call because, you know, it's one thing if you didn't look at his hand, but that's not the way this went. So, you know, queen jack is clearly, especially offsuit, is a folding hand here.
Now, I will disagree with you. I think I'm going to be raising with a pretty wide range now because of that dead money. And also knowing that I think that enough players at the table recognize that they can't just be crazy in this hand. So, if I get the chance to be the first aggressor, I'm probably going to take it with... pretty much anything. Because think about it, we're in a 1-2 game here, right? There's 60 in the pot. You know, if I go ahead and throw 10 bucks in, which is probably a standard raise at that, I mean, it's 10 bucks to win 65 of dead money. No one put anything in, right? The casino put that in.
Right.
No one lays claim to that. It's not like a big blind where people get defensive about it, right?
Right.
I'm willing to maybe take that gamble and get heads up, three-handed or something like that, and begin to play. Because remember, no one knows what I have, right?
Right.
So if I'm first in, I know I'm going to drive somebody out of the pot. So now my odds of winning this pot have grown significantly, right? And if I can drive everybody one or two out, then I can play whatever board comes with somewhat of confidence. So, yeah, I'd be surprised. I forget in his scenario, it wasn't under the gun limped. Was probably thinking his strategy. Let's just get in cheap and hope I hit. Whereas under the gun plus one, I had a completely different idea. You know, if I'm the first one being aggressive here, I've got a better shot of winning the pot that's already there, which is pretty good.
All right, well, I guess you disagree with me in the sense that I would probably play tighter than you.
Right.
But if I was first in, I would raise, probably with a much looser. I was thinking like of a a re-raise of the guy who's under the gun plus one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But yeah, but if I was first in, I would probably raise a pretty much very loose hands. The other question is, then he says, what hands would you raise with and how much? You're not really giving us any specific. Is there, you said $10? Did that be right?
If it gets to me
and it hasn't been
no
raised
one yet. Is raised, I'm raising with anything.
With anything, no matter what it is? Even right. If it is that deuce seven?
I'm going to take that shot. This is on my Powerball to
take. Ah, okay. All right.
Now, I guess where it gets difficult is if, like, obviously if I'm the big blind and everybody limps, then no, I'll take the free shot of hitting my cards. There's no reason to commit at that point, or small blind or something like that. But if I'm under the gun plus one, two, and the first two folded or just limped, yeah, I'm going to raise at that point and be aggressive. And I'm probably going to raise a little more than I normally do because the pot's so much bigger. But I'm not going to necessarily shove like this guy did. Obviously, he had ace-king, so, I mean, that changes everything. With ace-king, I probably would shove there. But why not? I mean, again, I believe ace-king is a drawing hand. I know others don't, but at that point, I mean, that's a strong enough hand to shove. If I have $85 in front of me and there's 60 already there,
right. That's
definitely strong enough for me to shove and try to take it down right there and not have to outplay someone for it.
Okay, well, you know, the show's getting long. I don't want to keep hammering on these things. But he said, if he had ace-ace instead, should he have raised less to encourage a caller? I might have called if he raised less. The more I thought about this, the less confident I was that I understood how to play it. So any thoughts on that? I don't know if I would have wanted somebody to call me. Because if I raise, you know, you already six big blinds or something. There's so much dead money out there that any cards could call and outflop your ace-ace, and you want to be against one person. But if you're not making it juicy enough, you know, like he said, that three big blinds was meaningless. If that were true at his table, then making it six big blinds is probably still meaningless. So then if he's betting 40, then he might as well just shove anyway because, you know, I mean, so it's a real fine line. I don't think I would want – if I had ace-ace, I'd be happy to shove because I think somebody might – be, hey, he's just doing it to get that 65. I'll call
exactly.
You. And then
I mean,
you have ace-ace. Yeah.
Why would you not want to raise big with ace-ace
right,
here?
Because
Everybody's going to think that you're raising light to try to steal that pot.
Yeah.
And that's what I want. You probably have a better chance of getting called by doing that.
Exactly. So that's a perfect one time to have ace-ace.
Raising less, you're setting a trap for yourself.
Yep,
that point.
Absolutely.
So, but that's the easiest question that Frank answered.
All right, Frank. Thanks. That was the easiest question. Thank you. We ended on a high note. All right, call the floor. If you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll have Annie Up Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how to would have ruled. This comes from Mark Finnegan. He says, there's been some discussion among some players that I know about the TDE rule on soft play and not betting the nuts when last to act on the river when checked to. Does this rule apply to cash games? Is it up to the card room as to if this rule even applies to a cash game? What kind of penalty does or would a card room impose on a cash player for this? And one thing is, too, is you don't also have to be checked to on the river. They could also bet to you on the river if you don't raise.
Exactly.
You're also, if you just call and you have the nuts, then they'll think you're soft playing with that guy, too. So, but here's what Sam said. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Sam says, this rule has caused lots of controversy, in my opinion. It is a soft play rule. And what players need to understand is that it's the tournament director's determination of whether or not there was indeed soft play. 95% of the time, it's a new player doesn't even realize they have the best hand possible that closes out the action with a check. In a cash game, if a player closes out the action with the best hand without betting, then they're just costing themselves money. If it's a consistent issue of checking it down with another friend at the table, I will let the players know that we will separate them if it persists. It's not fair to players who have money invested in the pot. As far as penalties for cash games, I don't think this is a good idea. Usually a player is asked to leave for the night if their actions warrant it. I think this is penalty enough for players who tend to get out of line. I would hope that all poker rooms have guidelines in place for this scenario and many other scenarios that come up during play.
That seems fair enough to me. I don't really have any other opinion on that.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions from folks about penalties for cash games, and they just, quite honestly, they don't exist.
Yeah,
I mean,
they really
the
don't.
Penalty is, as you said here, obviously you could separate two players if they're soft play, but really the penalty is just asking to leave for the night. So I think people get all worked up with these poker TDA rules and spend all the time thinking about the rules and again the cash games and like, well, you're not allowed to do it in a tournament, so you shouldn't do it in a cash game. Well, that's correct, but in a tournament you can actually penalize somebody that makes some real sense.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just can't do that. But I like his analogy that, you know, you're only costing yourself money in a cash game.
Yeah.
In a tournament, obviously, it's different because you're working down to a scenario where there's one person left. So you're actually affecting other people's lives with it. Here, it's to the extent that, as he says, as long as there's not collusion going on, you're just costing yourself money. So.
Absolutely. All right, we have a brand new O'Malley's Move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a $1, $2, no limit hold'em cash game. The table is a little short at seven-handed, and there are two maniacs. We are most certainly the best player at this table. The blinds post, and we look down at the ace of spades, ace of clubs, under the gun. We make our standard raise to $8 and watch the action get folded around to the cutoff who calls. This is one of the maniacs, and he currently sits with 250. We've got him covered with 400. The blinds fold, and we go to a flop. The 8 of hearts, 8 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds falls. Since we were the pre-flop aggressor, we put out a bet of $12 into 16. The maniac calls. The turn is the 6 of hearts, putting 2 pair on the board. We make perhaps our first mistake and check. And with $40 in the pot, our opponent makes a $15 bet. $15? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at anteupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. And this comes from Mike.
That's it, Mike. Let me ask you, is this going to be like a situation that I don't have to worry about, like keeping tabs and writing it down? Or is this going to be like a hand of the week where I'm going to have to do some brain power?
I believe it skews more towards the situation. In fact, actually, my response to him was, this is a tough situation.
Okay. So I'm gonna...
But I can't promise you that, because, you know, I like to be somewhat fresh when we go back to these questions. So
I'm going to put the notepad down now. I'm going to just try to be all zen-like about this instead.
All right, so he says, it's 4:30 a.m. He had a bad beat last night, but he made the right play. But he wanted to say he started playing casino poker about 4 months ago. Tries to play when he can, but just found our podcast 2 weeks ago, and is a big fan.
Yes.
See? And we like to give shout-outs.
Now, when you say big fan, that mean they really admire us, or that they're big people?
It could mean that he has just a big fan, so.
Oh, his big fan is Room.
Say, cool, yeah.
Or that he is a big fan.
He is a big fan.
He spins around on the ceiling. That's interesting.
Yeah, he's a
too.
Coleman or something, right?
Coleman. I like Hampton Bay.
All right, so he's got a little pre-discussion here that I don't know whether we need or not, so I'm just going to run through it and find out if we need it. He says, last night with the wife out of town and no distractions, I got an aggressive 1-3 no-limit hold'em table, 10-handed, buying it for 200, increasing his stack to 475 just a few hours. I was playing well, and in comes a guy I've never seen before. He must have been a regular, and I just don't know him. He was loud and tried to playfully intimidate everyone at the table. Several people knew him, and he attracted a small crowd of amused and curious spectators. Not everyone was excited to see him. Two players actually got up and left.
Wow.
See, they probably listened to my advice before. This is how you deal with these people. Just leave.
He just leave.
He didn't intimidate me, though, our hero says. So okay. I quickly beat him in a few hands, one hand with top two pair, while he held nothing. He tried this with several other players and got lucky, occasionally winning a few pots on the turn of river. Then comes the hand an hour or so later. I had not played a hand for 15 minutes or so. I was on the button when dealt ace of hearts, queen of diamonds, and had 6 limpers to me. So I guess we'll treat it like a hand that we can until we get to the situation part.
All right, so we have ace, queen off, and
6 limpers.
Bunch of limpers, and it's a 1-3 table. And he said it was aggressive, wasn't it? How are they limping if it's aggressive?
Maybe it's loose aggressive.
Loose aggressive.
Maybe I'm
that's kind of weird, too.
Maybe but, people get excited at post-flop.
Let's shove. We have $400. If nobody has us covered, we're still going to be making a profit on the night if we lose. So let's shove. No. All right, let's see. 6 limpers. That's like 18 in the middle before they even the blinds. So you're looking at like $20 in the middle already. I got no problem trying to thin this field a little bit, right?
Sure,
let's raise, baby. I don't know, 20, 25 maybe? Let's really make them say, hey, I shouldn't have limped.
Yeah, I think I probably would do that. I would think the other thing is, because I know a lot of my listeners know that I've been in our emails back and forth with them, I've been very down on Ace Queen.
Yeah, well, I think everybody hates Ace Queen.
I tend to play very cautiously with it. So I also personally might want to limp as well too, and just hope I hit big and treat this like a set mining situation. But the fact that we have so many limpers in here, I think we can raise and tend to field and really control this pot and win more money than we could by limping and hoping for that miracle ace queen flop or three queens or something like that.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, I wanted to clear some of the table. I raised to 18, and it was down to the good regular in the small blind and the loud guy in the big blind of myself. So actually, I'm going to say I'm impressed that $18 raise cleared everybody out.
Yeah.
All the limpers out.
Yeah.
I would raise much more than that.
Yeah, I would have made it like 25.
I shouldn't say much more, but yeah, 20, 25. I guess 20 is not much different than 18, right? 18 is such a weird bet, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a weird bet.
But
he's probably right, though. I mean, you think about the limpers, if you're doing it, you know, three...
Oh, if you're doing tournament style, yeah. Cash game. I mean, my default raise in a 1-3 is 10 bucks to start with.
Yeah, so absolutely.
So I would add another three. I mean, it's almost 30 bucks, I think, would probably be a more accurate raise for me in this scenario. But 25 is fine. 18, I think, is really just going to build a pot. All right, so anyhow, we're three-handed and in position, obviously because we're on the button, but we're against the two blinds. Flop is the deuce of hearts, tray of hearts, jack of hearts. So three hearts. We do remember have the ace of hearts in our hand.
Right,
and both players check to us.
Well, we took control. We've got the nut flush draw. No reason not to make a bet, a stab at this now. I mean, it's expected anyway. And we still got two overs, too. Somebody hit their jack. Sure. They might not even be comfortable with just hitting their jack because we raised preflop. You know, we could easily have queens or better. So I would like to bet somewhere around 30 or so, maybe 35. There's 50-something in the pot, so maybe 35. No problem with that bet to me.
Yeah, it's probably closer to 70 in the pot, right?
So well, 3 times 18 is 54.
Times 3 plus
oh, and then the 18,
five,
yeah.
5 limpers before it.
Yeah, so maybe 55 or 60, yeah.
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 All right, I agree. Our hero bets 45. The small blind gets out of the way, and the loud guy started mouthing. Yeah. Saying things like, I'm going to let you double your money on this one. And then he went all in on me.
Yeah, I guess enough flush draw. How much does this guy have? Did he say how much he had?
Let's see. It says, it shocked me at first, but I didn't really believe he had anything by the way he tried to stare me down, how he's acting. He had bluffed several times before and would show his error after getting in the fold. I really felt I only needed a pair at this point to win. So he had to call off the Ranger stack. So the guy had him covered. So
the loudmouth had him covered? The guy just sat down?
Exactly.
How did he have him well covered? He just sat down.
Maybe
it's a 1-3 game.
Maybe it's one of these uncap rooms.
Oh, jeez. It's tough for me to lay this down. I mean,
well, remember,
I hate
he just played
but...
for 15 minutes or so he's... guy didn't just sit down, remember? He sat down at the beginning of the
game. But still, okay. But all right, so he's got us covered, though. I guess so. I mean, I guess he... All right, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I got the nut flush draw. I got two overs, and I got a guy who likes to bluff, and he's a loudmouth, out of position, and he tried to check raise me here. Thinking I'm going to go away. It doesn't even matter to me what he has. Even if he has a set, I don't care. I just can't let this hand go, given all the other things. I'm not good enough to just say, you know, I'm just not folding here. I mean, I got 13 outs to the nuts. I've got two overs. If they're good, you know, I could be good without even having to hit anything. This guy could just be one. He could have the king of hearts in his hand, you know?
Very small, too, but you have a runner straight. Possibilities.
Okay, yeah, you got Broadway too in case that comes. So
well, and a wheel. Too.
And a wheel, yeah. So there you go. So no, I can't fold. I mean, it's too bad. It's going to be all our money to do this. I can't believe this guy's got us covered that quickly. But you know, wow, that sucks. But yeah, I can't fold it. I can't.
Yeah, I totally agree. I hate these situations. I hate making this call, but I know it's the right decision.
Yeah.
All right, so our hero says, I really felt I only need a pair at this point to win, which I think is probably fairly accurate. And even if you're wrong with that, you've got outs to anything.
Yeah.
So he does call off the remainder of his stack. The villain turns over the six of diamonds, deuce of spades. So he has bottom pair with awesome kicker. Against, of course, our ace of hearts, queen and diamond. And here's what I have to say. I was feeling confident. The turn was there, but the river was a six of spades.
Oh, jeez.
And beats me with the two pair and does the jackass dance. And it was as if I had a spotlight on me when I left the poker room, but I felt like if I had to do it over again, I would do the same. Is this my inexperience, or did I just make the wrong play?
No, and there you go. You got him exactly where you thought he was. I mean, you had him pegged as you need. Any pair you make is going to be good. You were right. The guy was making a move. It was a horrible move. He got lucky. It was a horrible move. You could easily have deuces beat. You could have had queens with the queen of hearts in your hand. I mean, it was just a horrible move on his part, and he got lucky on you. That's really all it is. I mean, are the people out there who are going to say we should have folded, and they're going to throw a bunch of numbers at me? Maybe. But I'm not laying that hand down. And I don't think he should have either. I think he made the right. I mean, you got the nut flush draw and two overs against a maniac with a big mouth, out of position, who just tried to check raise you thinking you had ace-king and missed, and we're going to lay down. You know, it's not a folding situation there for you, I think.
I mean, aside from complete error, this is the best thing we could hope for. Like, we had a bottom pair. I mean, all the outs that we talked about having available to us were available to us.
Yep.
Other than, of course, my runner wheel was out because he had the six. But you know, all the hard outs, all the over. This is exactly what it was. This is what these guys do, though. They make these big things, and they get us worked up, and we make a call. In this case, it was a good one, and we lose, and then he gets to act like an idiot. And we have to go home with our tail between our legs, feeling like we did something wrong. And we didn't here.
No, we didn't do anything wrong. So
this guy turned poker into bingo. We were willing to sit the table with him and play bingo with him, and you know, B11 didn't come up for us this time. But.
And it's not a complete loss because you get the Chinese 13-card poker rabbit.
I mean, exactly.
There you go, right there. Let's get some of that money back. So.
You're talking about a game for gamblers.
That's right. There you go. All right, another good show. Don't forget, next week, part two of O'Malley's Move. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.